So this morning I'm going to give a talk on yet another one of my favorite koans. And I want to report first, for those of you who have just arrived to the Ango, this is maybe your first sitting period, that we've been taking up as the topic for the Ango various koans that our teachers and senior Dharma teachers and Dharma teachers find inspiring or find somehow important in not just their practice lives, but in their ordinary lives, in the life of being a human being, which, by the way, is the same as practice life. There's a way that we arbitrarily divide it. But what we learn as we sit in Zazen is exactly the same as what we learn in our daily life, although most often our daily life is very accelerated in its pace. And so there is such a gift that we give ourselves and we take time to stop and sit still and encounter whatever is present. So I started thinking about this koan as the one I wanted to talk about this morning a couple of days ago, and I was very excited about it. And then the excitement wore off. And I don't know about you, but I find this is true of everything in Zen practice. We get really excited, and then the excitement wears off. And when the excitement wears off, we find ourselves at a choice point. Ordinary people who don't practice Zen at that moment in the choice point would just say, the hell with this, and go to the movies. And maybe we do go to the movies in our own minds. But the reality is that koans and shikantaza practice, breath practice, all have these moments in them when we encounter, as Wu Men, the collector of the Gateless Gate, says, the iron wall. Everything becomes shiny and flat, and we can't climb up it. And in those moments, if we retreat, if we run away, then that's interesting, and that's a perfectly okay choice, but it doesn't allow the koan or the practice of shikantaza or the practice of the breath to penetrate us and teach us. And that's really what happens with all these practices. They teach us. We don't try to make things happen, although, of course, we do try to make things happen, and then at a certain point we realize that when we're sitting opposite that iron wall, this is when practice becomes really ripe. So last night I read all the commentaries I have on this koan, and it just got even flatter and duller, and I thought, I should pick a better koan. And that's what I'm talking about. So I didn't. And I had very interesting dreams, which I won't relate to you now. But when I woke up this morning, I was excited about it again. And over the course of the morning, it's gone up and down and up and down. So let's see where it is now. This is case number 19 from the Gateless Gate. And it's called Nanchuan's Ordinary Mind is the Way. Jiaozhou asked Nanchuan, what is the way? Ordinary mind is the way, Nanchuan replied. Shall I try to seek after it? Jiaozhou asked. If you try for it, you will become separated from it, responded Nanchuan. Well, how can I know the way unless I try for it? Persisted Jiaozhou. Nanchuan said, the way is not a matter of knowing or not knowing. Knowing is delusion. Not knowing is blankness. When you have really reached a true way beyond doubt, you will find it as vast and boundless as open space. How can it be talked about on the level of right and wrong? And with these words, Jiaozhou came to a sudden realization. And here's Wu Men's comment on this koan. He says, Nanchuan dissolved and melted away before Jiaozhou's questions and could not offer a plausible explanation. Even though Jiajiao comes to a realization, he must delve into it for another 30 years before he can fully understand it. And here is Women's verse. The spring flowers, the autumn moon, summer breezes, winter snow. If useless things do not clutter your mind, you have the best days of your life. So this koan is about Nanchuan and Zhaozhou, two very famous characters in Zen history, in the Zen pretend history we've been talking about, the legendary history of Zen. Zhaozhou is the teacher who gave us the koan Mu, and he is famous for his pithy words and pointed directions. Mu is one example of that, but there are many. We heard the other day about the oak tree in the garden. And he lived, it's said, to be 120 years old. And he had his great enlightenment, according to the legend, when he was 60. And then he practiced hard for another 20 years, and then he went on pilgrimage, and then he became a teacher in his own right at the age of 80. So those of you who are thinking it's hopeless, you can use Zhaozhou as a good example. It's never too late to wake up to your true nature. And there's some disagreement here about when this koan took place in Zhaozhou's life. There are a bunch of commentators who think it took place when he was very young. He started practice when he was 18, and that this was an early meeting that he had with his teacher, Nanchuan. And other people think it happened later, when he was about 50 years old, and Nanchuan himself was a very old man. But it doesn't really matter, because the spirit of Zhaozhou in this koan is the spirit that first drew me to it. When I first heard it, I thought, yes, these are my questions. This is what I want to ask. And I can't believe that Zhaozhou, who gave me that horrible Mu thing to work with all these years, has also, or this wonderful Mu thing, we have to admit. But sometimes it feels horrible. So the horrible, wonderful Mu is also a person who, in this case, in this story, doesn't get it. He wants to know. He yearns to know. He's asking. And the question, what is the way, is such a beautiful question. What is the way? What am I doing here? What am I supposed to do? Give me some direction. And any of you who've been in the Zen game long enough know that the teachers do give you direction, but they're useless. But they don't really point you to where you need to go, because, you know, they're really just pointing you towards yourself. As Wu Men says in another case, in another line of poetry, because it's so very clear, it takes a long time to realize. We like to say it's right in front of your face, but you don't see it because you're off looking someplace else. And this is so true of us human beings. We're always searching for something, and all the time we're right in the middle of it. There's a famous story about a Japanese ship that was going down the Amazon River, I guess it was at the headwaters of the Amazon, and it was trying to navigate the Amazon, and it had run out of water in this long journey from Japan to South America. And it saw another ship signaling to it, and it signaled back, and it signaled, "Where can we get fresh water? Can you give us some?" And the other ship said, "Put your buckets down here," because they'd already left the ocean and were already on the river, but they didn't know it. "Put your buckets down here. Just come here. Right here is everything you need to know. Everything is here for you in this way, not some other way, not some idealized way." So none of us are going to get younger. Our health comes and goes, but some of us have chronic conditions. There are certain situations we're all saddled with that get a little bit better and then a little bit worse and then much better and then terribly worse and then we're done. And you all know that. And we chant it, the five remembrances, just in case we forget. So this dilemma we find ourselves in, where we think that we're far from the truth. I was so delighted that Steve had us read that section of the Genjo Koan today, because it's so apropos here. When you first seek the Dharma, you stray far from the boundaries of the Dharma. But the Dharma is already correctly transmitted. You are already your original self. It's important to just take a few moments to take that in. You are already your original self. Already done. Already. How could that be? How could this person here be a Buddha? How could this be what awakening is? And this is the great teaching of this practice of Zen, that this is in fact what we discover. Put your buckets down. What you've been looking for is here. It's been here the whole time, but you missed it. We miss it because we are looking elsewhere. We are, as Wu Men also says in another verse, looking south to find the North Star. It's just what we do. And when the way is revealed to us, then it's not what we expected it was going to be. And any of you have had any kind of even a little glimmer or a little intimation of this true self manifesting itself, you know this. And I suspect that everybody in this room and probably all the people listening to the recording have all had these intimations, or why would you be interested in a practice like this? So in those intimations, what we intimate is not rainbows in the sky and ponies and unicorns and sparkle dust. Although I guess I could take that manifestation. I had never thought about it until this moment. But maybe because we're all unique, that is how it is for somebody. But really, all of that is beside the point, because the teaching is always here, 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 here. It's nowhere else. As Gary Snyder says in one of his poems, there's no other life. This is it. So how do we engage in it? And of course we hear these teachings, and then this is where Jiaozhou's so fantastic. Young Jiaozhou, probably, that's my preference for the story. He was young, and he said, what is the way? How do I do this? How do I proceed? And I some of the commentaries were written by Japanese teachers who point out that this word way is a translation of the word Dao, the Chinese word Dao, which of course means the way and has many, many other meanings too. Kind of the whole enchilada is another translation of it. It's just this whole practice that we're doing. When Bodhidharma came from India to China, he brought all these Indian words with him that pointed out all these different aspects of practice and prajna and all these and bodhi and all these different words. And the Chinese translated them all as Tao, because there already was the Tao, the great Tao in China, the way of what's now called Taoism. And Confucius also talked about the Tao. So Zen, as you all know, is a combination of Confucianism and Taoism and this Indian Buddhism that came in the first couple of hundred years of this these years. So the way, the Tao in Japanese, splits off into two different meanings, apparently, and I don't know Japanese, so I'm just relying on what these guys say, and I checked in with David, who does know a little Japanese, and they talk about the word Do, which is very familiar to us in Zen, because it's usually affixed to another word, like this place of practice is the Zen Do, the way of meditation. This is where we practice it. And there's Cha Do, the way of tea, and Kendo, the way of the sword, and all of that stuff, all these ways. This is, according to these Japanese teachers, the big sense of the word Tao. But also, the Japanese have apparently another word that also translates the same character that's used to write Tao, and it's Michi. And when I asked David about it, he said, oh, that just means a street. And I looked it up in the dictionary, and as usual, David was right. It just means a street, but it also means a way, a path, the direction that you go, how you get there. It's what we might call the ordinary sense of the word Tao. Where do I put my feet now? How do I get to the bathroom? How do I sit on my cushion? How do I get something to drink? How do I go here and go there? That's the meaning, I guess, of the word Nichi. And the commentators who are Japanese say that they believe that when Jiaozhou asked Nanchuan what is the way, he's asking about Nichi. He's asking, how do I practice? What do I do? He's not asking for some philosophical answer. You know, what is Buddhism? He's saying, I'm really lost. Show me how to do this. Show me in the ordinary sense. And Nanchuan answers him in these famous words that really are so inspiring if we let them into our hearts. And it's easy to misunderstand this phrase, but if you understand that Jiaozhou was just asking, where do I go? In a way, Nanchuan was saying, come here. Just right here. Ordinary mind, or the ordinary heart, because the word is the same in Chinese and Japanese. Ordinary mind is the way. Ordinary heart is the street you're looking for, the pathway that you can take to get where you need to go. And what is ordinary? And we have to be careful here. It's not the ordinary of our usual deluded mind, although on one level it is, because that is another expression of the awakened nature, but it's a little bit of a contorted expression. It's a little bit of kind of fuzzy, foggy, murky expression. And this is where most of us live most of our lives. And then every once in a while, you know, when that clarity comes, that little intimation of, oh, it's right here, then things begin to drop away on their own. We don't get rid of them. They just drop away. And in that moment, we find our way to the true ordinary. We find our street that leads us to here, to the simple way, the uninflected way, the way beyond strategies and trying to figure out what to do. Ordinary mind, ordinary heart is the path, is the way. But Jiaozhou, and oh, bless Jiaozhou here, because some of you, I know especially, have this same spirit, and it's really an important spirit. You'll never lose it, I predict, of just saying, not good enough, I want more, and comes up with another question. And this question is even maybe more touching in a way, because he's hearing Nanchuan's answer through his own delusion. And so he's still looking for, how do I do it? He doesn't know that it's right here yet. And you can't know it until you know it. So Nanchuan's very patient with him and must see, just as in so many of these dialogues, the promise of this young student who later will become famous enough to still be our teacher here so many centuries later. And so Jiaozhou asks this question, shall I try to seek after it? Shall I try to find this ordinary mind, this ordinary heart? And of course, implicit in his question is, where is it? How do I get there? How do I get where I want to go? And please take this in, because this second question is, he's coming from such a sincere place. One of the translations of this koan begins, with great sincerity, Jiaozhou asked. And we probably, that translator just added that line. Who knows? I don't read Chinese or Japanese, but maybe it's there. With great sincerity, shall I try for it? And of course, another pattern that a lot of us have in this Zendo is that we're trying to be good. We're trying to do the right thing. We're trying to turn left when we're supposed to turn left, turn right when we're supposed to turn right, and bow here and, you know, all that stuff. And, And it's hopeless. I hope you've all realized that by now. There's just too much to remember about what to do, how to be a good person, let alone to be a good Zen student. And in my opinion, good Zen students are people who get lost and confused and struggle and bitch and moan and finally give up and settle down on their seats and turn towards this very life that appears to be not the life we want. When we turn towards that life, the unwanted, this is such a treasure chest. This is such a place of gifts. But we don't know that because it hurts. It feels terrible. So this turning towards, so we're just like Jajo. So shall I try to seek after it? You know, where do I go? Give me the map. Show me. And feel, you can feel that spirit in him right now. And Nanchuan probably felt it too. So Nanchuan says, if you try for it, you will become separated from it. If you try for it, you will become separated from it. And maybe you can feel the sense of this as well. If we make distinctions and become separate, if we say it's over there and it's not here, then we're lost. We're not recognizing the true way. So just our seeking it and going elsewhere takes us farther and farther away from it, just like Dogen said in the little piece we read from the Genjo Koan. So the issue here is still, then what do I do? And Nanchuan is explaining to Jiaozhou in a way, but not really. He's just pointing him. He's just like taking his shoulders and turning him around. And at this point, maybe he's spun him around and Jiaozhou doesn't know where he is. And he asks this very logical question. And again, I just love him for it. How can I know the way unless I try for it? You know, and that's the big question. That's the question that took Dogen to China, and it's the question that brings us here. It's not just that you say, oh, ordinary mind is the way, got it, you know, what's on TV? It's not like that. We have to sit in the middle of the striving and know the striving. We have to get in the car and drive to the Zen Center and sit. We have to exert ourselves. But the exertion is not an ordinary exertion. It's not the kind of exertion that we're used to in our lives. All of us probably have had so much success in our lives in various places, in school and in our work and in other places. Zen doesn't respond to that kind of striving. But this is all Jiaozhou knows. And what we know about Jiaozhou is that when he was very young, he heard about Zen, lived in the north of China, and came south to meet Nanchuan. But he took a long journey, as so many of these legendary characters did. And we've taken a long journey to get here, where we are right now. We've had lots of obstacles in the way, and we've overcome them to get here, small and large. So this is all that Jiaozhou knows, striving, working hard, trying. How do I do it? How do I do it? And then Nanchuan gives his little teisho, his little dharma talk. The way is not a matter of knowing or not knowing. This is a great thing to say, because when we open up to only don't know and not knowing, we can think, great, got it. Now I can go off and go to the movies. But it isn't that. Anything that gets fixed, that gets solidified, isn't it. So it's not any opposition. It's not this or that. It's not form, and it's not emptiness. It's not anything that can be boxed up and categorized. So it's not a matter of knowing, which is the old way, and it's not a matter of not knowing, which might appear to us to be the Zen way. He says knowing is delusion, and not knowing is blankness. When you've really reached the true way, beyond doubt, you'll find it is as vast and boundless as open space. And right here in this room, in this moment, what Nanchuan is talking about is available. It's right here, just in sitting here, just in listening to these words. Vast and boundless. That's one of the reasons that we decided to call this school of Zen Boundless Way Zen. It's a boundless, open, rich, luxurious, tasty, beautiful. I'm running out of adjectives, but you know what I'm talking about. It's just everything. And we hear this, and our minds snatch on it and go, oh, I get that. Yeah, it's everything. Okay, what's next? How do I get there? Already here. Put your buckets down. How can it be talked about, Nanchuan says, on the level of right and wrong? Really, we might say on the level of any duality. How can it be talked about like this? And then, as so many of these koans end, it says with these words, Jiajiao came to a sudden realization. But Wu Men, who collected this koan and comments on it here, is not going to let either Nanchuan or Jiajiao off the hook. This is not the end of the story, and they lived happily ever after. He says, Nanchuan dissolved and melted away before Jiajiao's questions. This is the line that I woke up with this morning. He dissolved and melted away. What a beautiful description of what it means to try to teach the Dharma. Any attempt to even explain it, like I'm doing now, is useless, it's hopeless. And all we can do is dissolve and melt away. And then the Dharma itself is what comes forward, teaching us all the time. We could just sit here and listen to the bird outside, or sit here and look at the light on the floor, and that would be a good Dharma talk, a good teisho, a good demonstration of the Dharma. But we've set it up so that we talk, so I'm going to keep talking. Even though Jiajiao comes to a realization, he must delve into it for another 30 years. And some of the Japanese commentators say that the phrase for 30 years is a way of talking about for a really, really long time. It's not 30 years, because if you get into the idea, oh, it's 30 years, great, so in 30 years I should be set. It doesn't appear to work like that. It's lifelong. There's no end to this. This is what I know in my own heart, and I know it in every person I've encountered who practices this great way. They never give up. They never say, done, fine, now I'll retire. They just keep going along this way, which means that every footstep on the path is here, 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 here. Every place we arrive is where we are, and that's the whole thing in itself. Time is a little bit of a tease in Wu Men's comment. When he says that Nanchuan couldn't give a plausible explanation, that's Wu Men is very often says things that appear to be insults, but are the greatest praise. What good would it have done Jiajiao if Nanchuan had been able to explain it so well that Jiajiao said, thank you, got it, and then went away? Useless. It's, again, it's a turning about. The teacher takes you on the shoulders and spins you around. That's the pointing. It's not an explanation, ever. Even if we get hooked into explaining, we can never truly explain the Dharma, never truly explain the Tao. And so Wu Men goes on, and he explains it in his own way. Very famous poem that is often found in poetry collections, disconnected from this koan. And that's a little bit unfortunate, because it's a little misleading. There's another poet, a Japanese poet, who wrote a poem based on this poem that he calls Not the Way. And the poem is, it's not the spring flowers, it's not the autumn moon, it's not the summer breezes, it's not the winter snow. And then he wrote another poem that is entitled The False Way, where he says, It is the spring flowers, it is the autumn moon, it is the summer breezes, it is the winter snow. The reason that poet did that is because it's so easy to fall into duality again, even with this beautiful poem, to think, oh yeah, got it, beautiful, 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 uh-huh, yep, yeah, I got it, spring flowers, yeah, that's Zen. But you know that the flowers fall. That's Zen too. And the autumn moon, oh, so beautiful in the clear, crisp, cool sky of autumn. And then, of course, the clouds come and obscure it. That's Zen too. And the summer breezes, and then, boy, it gets really, really hot, and we have to turn on the air conditioners and blow all the fuses in the temple. That's it too. And I won't even tell you about the winter snow, because I think we have had enough of a winter to know that it's not just beautiful. Although sometimes, even after shoveling for months and months and months, standing out in the snow and having the snowflakes fall on our face, maybe that can be a moment too of, ah, before we feel that pain in our lower back. So don't fixate on how beautiful, but really hear what woman is pointing us to. Life itself. Life itself. If you can hear that bird, there it is. Life itself. Life itself. Put your buckets down here. This is it. There's no other place. There's no other life. Thank you. So we'll ease our postures, get comfortable, and we'll have our Dharma dialogue now. And this is a time for Ed to leave to cook lunch. And also a time for questions or observations about the talk, about the koan, about your own practice, whatever is coming up for you.
My heart just breaks open at that line, trying for it separates you from it. Mm. I've spent a lifetime trying, wanting the handbook, and then saying the handbook's not it. And I'm just tired of trying, but not in a depleting way. And so in a surrendering way. So when you read that, I just felt these tears non-stop, because it's not about little me trying. So I just felt that so deeply.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's so nice, Christine, just to, as we hear these talks and as we hear these stories, to notice what touches us and this capacity we have as human beings to listen with the ears of our heart. And then we hear exactly what we already know, where it reminds us, yeah, it points us back there. And so it's not about understanding the whole thing or tracking the whole thing, but just noticing what touches you, what touches me as I listen, and then just appreciating that. Yeah, thank you.
I really liked the translation that you discussed about, you know, at first it was like the Tao, the way, and that's what I imagined when you first said it, like this beautiful sort of enchanted path. And then you sort of talked about it like the literal street, just the way, and I had this image of the street that I live on now. I'm like, oh, it's so sad. Like, it's, you know, sort of not that nice. And it's still, you know, it's still a street. It's still a life. And that is really nice to sort of bring that.
Yeah. That's such a beautiful example of what's going on in this koan, I think. You know, that we just keep trying for some beautiful thing. and you know, and it separates us, and to really look out on the street where you live. I have often walked on the street before, right? You know that song, and it's like we just don't see it. We just don't see it, and even though it's a little bit maybe messed up, your street, it's the street where you live. It's kind of beautiful. Thank you.
So, a couple of thoughts. One of them is, I was raised a Roman Catholic, and so I know that I was born guilty, all right? And so now I've been practicing as a Zen Buddhism, and so my question is, was I born guilty?
Is that really your question?
Well, because I still feel really guilty. Pretty much... a lot, you know, and so I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, yeah, but it got me off my fat ass and into the car and drive the hour and 15 minutes to get to the Zendo and do this. So, I think that Jiangzhou and Nanchuan, this whole koan really does point us towards something, you know, because, you know, you can feel Jiangzhou's yearning.
Yeah.
And Nanchuan is, you know, he's tapped into that. He knows, he's been there. He's been exactly where Jiangzhou is. And it's like, you know, don't try to toss out that yearning. You're right there. You're right there. But, you know, he can't tell him that.
Right.
Because if he told him that, maybe young Jiangzhou, maybe old Jiangzhou, just, you know, and it's like you can't try.
Yeah.
You can't. You can't try to toss out the yearning. Not if you really want that.
Right. It strikes me that it's like what Dogen says about the Zen cook. You know, uses all the ingredients in the kitchen to make a delicious meal. And then so the Catholic guilt... You might think I need to get rid of that to be a good Zen student, but it actually, it's part of the flavor of your stew. The stew that is you.
Yeah, the stew that I sit in and I get cooked in every day and whatever. Yeah.
And every one of us has our own flavors.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I think it's a wonderful point, Steve, that we can't purify ourselves. I mean, that's the yearning, and that separates us. That's what we tried to do, right? We're trying to be somebody else. Somebody in one of the Dharma talks earlier this week, somebody said that. Who was that? Well, it was Jan last night. Right. You can only be yourself. What did she say exactly? Do you remember anybody who was here? It's like, you couldn't be some other person that you want to be. You have to be the person you are. And that person is the one who awakens. You know, that's actually the person who awakens. It's not the imaginary person that you think you should be who awakens. Right, it's the guilty.
Yeah, the guy that smells and you know is disgusting most of the time to himself and others and so on.
Yeah,
that guy.
Are you talking about yourself?
Trying to.
Oh, I thought I just said.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, but that's the self. The self, kind of that's the muddy view of the self for sure, and that's it. That's the whole thing. The whole enchilada.
Yeah, and Dogen also talks about if you try to reach out for something, you're not gonna touch it. But if it comes into you, and if you're open to it coming into you, then every once in a while.
Yeah. Thank you.
And a lovely example of this, lower your buckets here, right? So much arises and we think, well, when I get over this, then, you know, the guilt is the problem, or self-loathing, or, you know, litter on the street, or whatever. That's why this advice is so radical and so hard to do. because it's so clear, these states that arise, the resentment or the anger or the... And we're sort of, we're caught in the trance before we even can be aware. And this, as you were saying, Melissa, this stopping or slowing down, like what's here now? Oh, feelings of unworthiness and contraction. What if this is it? You know, not to follow the mind road, but the aliveness of the yearning or the, you know, longing or whatever. But quite a thing to look where we are.
So it's just striking me how difficult it is to talk about these things, and there's a couple things in here that, you know, kind of turn things around a little bit. The one about knowing and not knowing, and usually we sit, you know, we talk a lot about not knowing, and it says, but it's not knowing or not knowing, you know, mm-hmm. and usually we're celebrating this not knowing, and here it is being split into a duality. But the one that was just coming up for me is about this trying. You know, we say trying separates you, I see myself trying so much of the time. I mean, I must be at least 80% trying by nature. You know, it just is how I am. It's trying, you know. And so in one sense, to always be trying and to think that trying is going to accomplish the goal is the problem here. It's not the trying itself.
Right.
And if I can... be with the trying and see the trying and realize that the answer is not in the trying, but the trying itself is not outside.
Right.
Trying is perfectly well included in the way.
Exactly.
It just isn't a solution, you know. It isn't a solution the way that I think. You know, I think I'm gonna. Okay, I'm just gonna try hard, and I'm gonna think real hard, and I'm gonna clarify this, and that'll be, you know, the answer will come. And it really has nothing to do with that. Can I just feel myself trying? You know,
right.
And just okay. And this is me trying. You know, and not getting anywhere. That's lowering my bucket right here,
that's
right?
That is,
exactly. That's such a great way of putting it, Steve. Because the mind immediately goes into, all right, so I should try not to try. Yeah. No, wait, I should try not to try not to try.
Right.
Oh, no, I should try not to try not to try. Yeah, this goes on forever. But I think that's the issue, that if you have the delusion that trying is going to get you someplace,
or have the delusion that trying is wrong.
Right. Yes.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
It flips right. both ways
it's the right
at any point. Right.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
The,
yeah.
Well, and the other thing about, you know, this knowing and not knowing, the problem that I think this koan goes deeply into, and, you know, when we study it, this is where we kind of go with it, that everything is divided into right and wrong, good and bad, this and that, and it really doesn't work that way.
Right.
So not knowing as opposed to knowing is the problem.
Right.
Knowing as opposed to not knowing
right.
is the problem. But and there are many different kinds of not knowing.
Right.
And he's not pointing to like Bodhidharma's deep not knowing.
Right.
He's pointing to the I don't get it kind of not knowing. Yeah. Because I don't get it is opposed to something else. It's like mu itself. Mu means no, but it's not the opposite of yes. It's this whole other huge, fathomless thing.
What's that one?
What? Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh.
Did you get it?
Yes.
Check. Whatever.
I was thinking maybe you could call that non-knowing, so that it includes, you know, knowing and not knowing are both this thing, you know. And sometimes we know, and sometimes we don't know, and it's the kind of the non-doing of knowing. Sometimes knowing arises, sometimes not knowing arises, and they're both it, and neither one is it, right? You can't say knowing is it. You can't say not knowing is it.
That's definitely where Dogen goes when he talks about Shikantaza, right? But again, watch it. Because we're going to get into all these concepts.
I may need to get rescued from this.
David will do that.
But what Steve was just saying, that because there is effort. You know, I think for a long time there was that, like, you know, don't try it. I end up sitting on the cushion having a 3-hour daydream. And finally it was just like, okay, this is obviously, this isn't, it's not working for me. So there's effort, but it's like, where do I direct that effort? You know, like, where is it? And I think we're, you know, that if I push really, really hard, I'm going to break through. Mm-hmm. No. But, you know, if the effort is directed towards the question, towards that gentle, what is this? That feels like effort that touches the heart and doesn't create a box. The other kind of effort, I'm creating boxes. I'm trying to come up with something. Because, I mean, I think the thing that always comes up for me with these is, just given Zen's history, is like, okay, where do ethics fit into this? And where do, you know, I'm sure, you know, Jiazhou practiced the Vinaya and had 187 memorized rules about how to live his daily life. Where does all that fit in to this practice for us? And, you know, there's a lot of effort in that, and there's a lot of very precise doing of things. So it's, this is the part where I think I may need rescue from.
Dave. Can you rescue him?
Your question is right to the point. So, how can we not be rescued? So you're at, there's something really important here, right here in this moment. Yeah, you know, of course there's form, and of course there's emptiness, but what is the way? And I love how you point to it not being fixed. Like, so there no formula. Picasso said, I'm always doing that which I do not know how to do. But in your question, I feel the spirit and this, the longing and wanting to align with something bigger than you. It feels like the striving is, all right, I know what it is and I just have to get there. But as you talk about this other effort, I sense in you aligning with what you love or what calls to you. And really giving ourselves wholehearted to that. Yeah, I think if we just sit on the cushion and daydream, I mean, you can do it. Actually, one of my first retreats, I thought I'd be really naughty. And one period, I didn't follow my breath. I thought, whoa, you know, really be radical. But it wasn't that interesting. But then that gave me a new way to come back to the breath. So maybe it's not about being good. Maybe it's just not quite as interesting. I mean, you can follow your mind if you want and see where it goes. But this a hair's breadth deviation and you're out of tune. So staying with the question, how do we do that which we do not know how to do? But throwing ourselves in again and again and again.
I always have the sense, for me, that it's trying to get to a place of openness and awareness, but that's kind of, you know, sort of on an eye catch, and the mind, you know, any kind of force on either direction, you know, you go tumbling off. It's kind of hard to climb up. Sometimes I only really ever get there when I don't consciously go after that.
Just like Nanchuan's advice. Yeah. Yeah, it's not something that we do. It's a realization of who we are. And that's why David could say to Will, your question is exactly to the point, which is also the response in another koan where somebody asks one of these questions. Yes, yes. Yeah, it's kind of an affirmation of what's in the bucket is yearning, is wanting to know, trying to figure it out, trying to stay balanced on a knife edge, whatever we think practice is. And then when we stop trying so hard, or we stop trying to stop trying in the spirit of this, then it's surprising, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's a koan.
It hits you by surprise.
Yeah, definitely. These koans are surprising. They go in ways we don't think they're going to go. Well, like life. Yeah.
Yeah, and that we can know it. Like in your question, I also hear that sometimes something happens that you, oh, this is what they're talking about. And a lot of the time we're saying, what are they talking about? You know? But that we can, as you track your own experience, can begin to notice. And then even when it's not it, how do we lower our bucket there?
Yeah. And that goes out. Oh, this is the subconscious mind telling me something.
Yeah, yeah. Right, right, yeah. You've been down that road.
Yeah. But you do have to go down that road plenty of times before you get sick of it. I mean, I think it's this getting bored with it. Like, let me figure this out. And there's a certain point where that wears off.
Yeah.
You can't make it happen.
I read the original text of Lao Tzu. Yeah, so the start of the book says 0 gilberts to 1, 1 gilbert to 2, 2 gilberts to 3, 3 gilberts to everything. I think the practice process is reversed. We are one of everything. So for us to see the true self of us, we need to go back the path to see. To see the zero. But in order to see the zero, I feel that we cannot ask a question, we cannot doubt, we cannot even see. Because Lao Tzu also said that if there's good, then the bad it comes. If there's right, then the wrong comes. So it's everything, it's a polarity. So zero can split into yin and yang. And then you can continue split, then you get the whole world. But in order to back to zero, if we ask the question that the self, it means we already have world. Tending to certain direction. I kind of feel that maybe just be there and observe. And that's what I learned from the book, that's what Lao Tzu taught me. And I forgot the exact word, but he's saying that you need to keep your mind not thinking in order to see. I feel that's something maybe like the question he asked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, all those, there's so much, so many people point to this, you know, Lao Tzu and these koans, and then how do we practice it? Mm. You know, because I think you're pointing exactly to the thing, so how do we go to that place of non-thinking, of zero? How do we find our way back in our own experience and in our own words?
I feel myself, it wasn't really hard at the beginning. It's hard to not wonder, but it takes time and patience, and someday it just everything shuts off. It shuts off is that the mind is quite strong. And you see the world, it's moving, feels everything around you, you hear, but not react. I feel that might be, to me that works, not react. You observe, but not react. You know, I am part of the world, I'm part of the whole group, but I see everyone, I hear, that I am part of you, but I am me.
Thank you. So we'll sit for another moment or two.